Chapter 20. How Every Ending is a Beautiful Beginning. Now, don't let that chapter title freak you out. The conversation you and I are about to have is going to be extraordinary because we're going to be talking about a committed relationship. One topic that kept coming up when I was researching this book was, how do you know when the issues that you're facing in a relationship are something that you can resolve versus something that you just need to accept? When is overthinking, frustration, and bickering normal? And when is it a sign that something is truly broken? When should I just let them versus admitting the painful truth that this relationship is no longer working for me? Now, I've been married for almost 30 years, and I can tell you, there needs to be mutual give and take and compromise. These things are critical to any successful relationship. No one's perfect. No relationship is perfect. And every single relationship changes with time because you're going to change with time. And in a long-term partnership, there are going to be periods in your relationship that are just extraordinary. And then there are going to be times that are extremely difficult. But every couple that has made a relationship work has had two important things be present. First, they both wanted the relationship to work, and they were willing to both do the work in order to make it better. And second, the issues that were creating problems did not require either person to give up on their dreams or compromise their values. So if you're sitting there wondering if you're in the right relationship, that's a good thing, because it means you want to be with somebody that's going to bring out the best in you and who will work with you to create a great life. One of the hardest things that I've experienced is being with someone who's a really good person, but knowing deep down that they're not the right person for me. Love the person, not their potential. See, anytime you find yourself questioning whether or not this is the right relationship for you, ask yourself this. Can you accept this person exactly as they are and exactly where they are in life and still love them? That means, do you truly love your boyfriend, girlfriend, wife, husband, or partner for who they are right now? Or do you love who they once were or who you wish they would become? And even if there are specific things that bother you, at the end of the day, they might not be deal breakers. They may be things that you have to learn to accept. And that's just work you're going to have to do to make this relationship thrive. Let them. For example, maybe you can't stand that they've started vaping, or they don't take care of themselves, or they're such a slob and it's driving you crazy, or they don't plan anything or make an effort, or the sex has just gotten so boring when it happens, and they never want to do anything, or they're not interested in moving to a new city or traveling to a new country on vacation, or they're constantly in a terrible mood. Can you still love them despite all these things? Because the reality of it is, they may never change. And here's the other thing. They probably won't. Remember one of the fundamental takeaways from the Let Them Theory. People only do what they feel like doing. And absolutely, you can influence them. But if you keep wanting them to change and they don't, it not only weakens your love, it creates resentment. And there's this funny thing that I've noticed with couples. It's almost like the longer that you're together, the more you want your partner to be just like you. Well, that's not really fair, and it's not how human beings work. So be honest with yourself. Are you just trying to make them more like you? Or is it that one of your fundamental needs in the relationship isn't being met? Because there's a big difference. And this is very important because based on the laws of human nature, you should just assume that the person that you're with is never going to change. Let them be. And instead of sitting there silently resenting them or criticizing them behind their back, be the loving and mature person in the relationship. Either stop trying to make them like you and accept them as they are, or have the productive and loving conversation about what you need and why it's bothering you. Maybe they don't even know you're upset by it, or they don't know how you feel about the issue, or they don't know how important it is to you, or they do know, but you have been pressuring them and now you've created a standoff. So before you spend another year overthinking and wondering if this is your person, have the conversation, apply the science, and then sit back and wait. And you now know how to do this using the ABC loop and the power of your influence. And if you want a refresher on how you do that, just go back and re-listen to chapter 15. But for the purposes of our conversation right now, I'll just give you the quick refresher. The ABC loop is this. A, apologize, then ask open-ended questions. B, back off, observe their behavior. And C, remember to celebrate any progress you see and continue to model the behavior change. When you use let me to influence someone else, do it with the hope that they change because you love them and you want something better for them and you want the relationship to work and this matters to you. But don't ever do it with the expectation that they must change. Because even when you use science to influence someone else, they're still their own person and they're in control of what they choose to think, say, and do. And remember to give it at least 3 to 6 months without any negative energy or complaining while you keep modeling the positive change and celebrating anything you see. Let them be. And remember why 3 months? Because it's plenty of time for your energy to shift and for the other person to suddenly feel inspired to make the change and believe it was their idea. They need space. And give it 6 months without any negative energy, no pressure, no judgment. You just focus on you. Keep modeling the positive change and celebrating anything you see and let them be. Why 6 months? Well, remember, you have to give it space for the tension to turn into transformation. 6 months is plenty of time for your energy to shift and for the other person to suddenly feel inspired to make the change and believe it was their idea. Remember the example of my friend and her husband? I mean, the issue of his health had been bothering her for years. And even though she loves him, it did make her wonder, is he the right person for me? Can she be married to someone who doesn't take care of themselves? So she's been using the let them theory to answer this question. She's letting him be. And meanwhile, she's just been going for her long walk every morning. She's been positive and happy. She's been complimenting him and hugging him. And she's been very affectionate whenever he exercises. And now she just has to wait. And one of the hardest parts about this 6 month period where you're going to back off and you're going to wait is just letting them be. And then you're going to notice that something happens. Your loved one is going to start to complain about the natural consequences of their actions or their inaction. Like they might start complaining about how much money they've spent on vaping, but they're still vaping, or how much they hate their job, but they haven't looked for a new one, or how depressed they feel, but they refuse to go to therapy. My friend shared that her husband was complaining the other day that he had gotten so winded during pickleball that he had to step out of the game with his friends. Now, when that happens, you know what your tendency is? Your tendency is to want to reassure someone. Don't do it. Let their complaint hang in the air. Don't respond. Let them sit with it. Say nothing. Let them experience their feelings. Let the silence do the work for you. Let them feel the consequences of their actions or inaction. Let them. And then let me use science. Just casually turn after that awkward pause where you didn't reassure them. Ask an open-ended question, just an innocent one. Sounds like it bothers you. Anything you want to do about it? Now, as you've already learned from Dr. K, these open-ended questions that you ask with concern and curiosity are what researchers call motivational interviewing. It makes your partner reflect on the conflict between what they truly want to change in their life and their current behavior. Right there, you just started stirring up someone's intrinsic motivation to change. Pretty cool, huh? But what happens if you follow the ABC loop and you wait patiently for 6 months and nothing changes? Well, it means your partner doesn't feel like changing. Their behavior tells you that. So now you have a choice because you always have power if you focus on your response. You followed the ABC loop. Now it's time for you to move to the next two steps, and that's D and E. You have to decide if this is a deal breaker. So step D, very simple. If after 6 months, the person hasn't changed or hasn't tried to change, assume they're not going to. And I'm sorry that I have to be the one to tell you this, but they're not ready. They don't want to do it. Doing it for you, not enough. It's not a priority of theirs, or maybe there's something deeper going on and they're just not capable of changing right now. Or maybe they just are the way they are. And that's okay too. Their behavior is the answer, and they've made it very clear. Let them. Not everybody wants to change. And sometimes in life, the most loving thing you can do is to stop fixing and start accepting, to be more loving, and just focus on yourself and what you can control. And what you can control in this situation is choosing to love someone as they are. I know it doesn't feel fair. I know it's disappointing. I know it may be frustrating and sometimes even devastating that someone won't change for you. Let them be. Because now it's time for the second part of the theory. Let me. It's time to decide if this is a deal breaker for you. Because remember, you always get to choose who and how you love. You can choose whether or not this is a deal breaker. And a deal breaker is something you can't live with for the rest of your life. And there's a simple way to figure that out. Just ask yourself, could you be with this person for the rest of your life if they never, ever change? Whether the answer is yes or no, we're going to move to step E, because something needs to end if this relationship is going to get better. And so step E, you got to either end your bitching about it or end the relationship. Because you're at a point where they're not changing, and you're now in this standoff on the issue, and you can either live with this or you can't. And I can't tell you whether this is a deal breaker or not. Only you know whether or not you can live with this. You have to choose to end your bitching or end the relationship. And this is very simple. Can you stop complaining about this for real? Can you stop griping to yourself or holding it over their head and acting in passive-aggressive ways or complaining to your friends or your siblings about it? Because if you're going to choose them, you owe it to your partner and to yourself to choose them exactly as they are. For my friend and her husband, this may mean that when she wakes up to hit the Peloton in the basement, she lets him sleep in. And that means being super quiet when she gets dressed instead of slamming the door like she used to. And I share this example because loving someone as they are goes beyond ending your bitching. You're demonstrating through your behavior that you do love them as they are. And you're leading with kindness and consideration. And that's what love is. That's all that love is having admiration and consideration for someone else. It means you're fond of them, and it means you have them in mind. And when you don't slam the door because you're annoyed that they're sleeping in, that's love. That's acceptance. Now, earlier, I asked you this question. Could you be with this person for the rest of your life if they never, ever change? What if your answer is, I don't know. Or, no, I don't think I can. Well, if you truly can't end your bitching, then you can't accept the other person and love them as they are. And that's not a very kind and loving thing to do. If you can't stop slamming the door in the morning or being passive aggressive when they're running late yet again, that's not really loving. Whether or not you end a relationship is a deeply personal decision that only you can make. Now, in the case of my friend and her spouse, it's not a hard call at all. His unhealthy habits, not a deal breaker, not even close. She loves him. She knows that to make the relationship work, she has to work harder at accepting him and changing how she shows up in the relationship. She needs to bring more compassion and kindness to their dynamic. She can keep trying to influence him, but the expectations, whoosh, they gotta go, along with any complaining. So this is really about her, not about him. And because he's not changing who he is, she needs to change who she is in order for this relationship to be better. And I want to share something with you. It's called the 80-20 rule about relationships, because I think it really puts things in perspective when there's an issue between you and someone else that is really bugging you. And it's this. I think oftentimes we get so focused on the 20% of someone that we wish they would be like. We wish that they would be funnier or more outgoing or that they'd be more romantic or athletic or have more money, whatever. Those are nice to haves. That you forget about the 80% that matters. Are you with somebody that's kind? Are you with somebody that is loyal? Are you with somebody that's considerate and that admires you? Are you with somebody that you can talk through the difficult stuff with? Are you with somebody that brings out the best in you? If you got those 80% of things covered, you've won the lottery, for crying out loud. And you got to really ask yourself, am I just aiming my perfectionism at this person? Am I just creating some wish list in my mind and then holding it over this person who's actually amazing? Am I losing sight of what actually matters by being focused on these things that don't? And oftentimes, when I've been really frustrated in the almost 30 years that I've been married, it's because of that 20% that doesn't actually matter. And so you might be wondering, well, how do I know for sure, Mel, if it's truly the stuff that matters or the stuff that doesn't? And that's why the Let Them Theory is going to really help you. Because what you're talking about when you're struggling with whether or not you're with the right person or whether or not these are issues that you can live with is you're struggling with compatibility. The truth is, there's a very big difference between being committed to someone and being compatible with them. And it's very common to fall in love with someone and experience what feels like the most incredible relationship of your entire life. And then over time, the two of you start to grow in very different directions. You want different things, or you realize that you've become different people. And it's incredibly hard when that happens because you haven't fallen out of love. You just don't quite fit like you used to. And I want you to remember what I told you earlier, that there are two things that are required to make a relationship go the distance. Number one, both people want the relationship to work and both are willing to work on it to make it better. But the second thing that's required is that the issues that are creating problems or tension or frustration don't require either one of you to give up your dreams or compromise your values. And you may be in a situation where you both want the relationship to work and you're both willing to do the work. But when there's a problem with compatibility, no matter how hard you work at the relationship, there's a high probability it's not going to work. It's one of the saddest and hardest things to come to terms with when it happens. And again, this is deeply personal stuff that you got to sort out. I'm going to give you a few examples to help you really think about the difference between commitment and compatibility and how important compatibility is. For example, let's say that you're in love with and just deeply committed to somebody who is British, and they dream of moving back home to London and raising their family there. But you've always envisioned staying close to your family who lives in Atlanta. Or another example that comes up a lot with couples, one of you wants children, the other one doesn't, or they're not really that sure. You may talk about it. You may fight about these issues. You understand, for example, the reason why your partner wants to move back home to Europe, and they understand why you don't. Or maybe you've discussed the pros and cons of having children, but you never seem to come to an agreement on what's the future. You've gone around and around and around on the topic, and in the past, you've just said, okay, well, we don't need to decide this right now. But now has come, and you're at an impasse. They want to move. You don't. You want children. They don't. You're committed to each other. You love each other, absolutely. But are you compatible right now? How do you know if this is truly a deal breaker? Well, there's actually some amazing research that's going to help you figure it out. So let's take the situation where you're in love with someone who's always wanted to move back home to London, and you've always envisioned being closer to your family here in the United States. You have to ask yourself this. Will you regret breaking up with them more than moving to London with them? And if you do agree to move to London, are you going to end up resenting them as you leave your family and friends behind here in the United States? Both choices are going to come with heartbreak. One of them is going to require you to give up on a dream that you've had about living close to your family. The other one requires you to leave the person who has been, until now, the love of your life. And by the way, your partner is facing the exact same heartbreak because they won't compromise either. Your partner's not changing. They're moving to London, with or without you. Let them. And now, let me make a choice. Am I willing to compromise to be in this relationship? And this is where the research comes in. According to the research, 69% of problems in your relationship are not resolvable. Now, this statistic comes from 40 years of scientific research that's been conducted by Dr. John and Julie Gottman. They are the most famous relationship researchers on the planet, and they also happen to be married. They've found that the number one issue that couples fight about are things that'll never change, like how someone always runs late or isn't as ambitious as you would like, or how they spend the weekend in front of the TV, or their hobbies are different from yours, or they're messy, or they're a homebody, or they have different political opinions. These are all examples of the 69% of problems in your relationship that are just not resolvable. That's why it's on you to figure out, what do you value at the deepest level? And is this something you can compromise on if your partner won't? Is this something that you can accept? For some people, moving wouldn't be a big deal at all. In fact, they'd jump at the chance to move overseas with the love of their life. How exciting! The Gottman's research says that if you're constantly fighting about the same stuff and going around and around, it's probably because of a profound difference between your and your partner's personalities and your deepest hopes and dreams. In other words, you value different things and you have a different vision for how you want to live your day-to-day life and what you want to experience in your life. And according to the Gottmans, almost all gridlock in your relationship comes from unfulfilled dreams. And if you're dealing with unfulfilled dreams, you got a major problem on compatibility. Let's take the couple fighting about moving to London, or the couple in disagreement over having kids. These are big issues, life-defining issues. That's why you can't let it go. You can't let it go because it's tied to a deeper vision that you have about your life. And that's why it's a very personal decision that you're going to have to make. Moving to London seems like something that's worthy of compromising on. But if you've always wanted kids, you're going to regret wasting a decade with someone only to wake up in your mid-40s and realize this was something you truly wanted, and now it's not going to happen. Ask yourself, is this going to require me to give up on my dreams? Because according to the Gottmans, if it does, that's a problem. And there's one more thing I want to mention as you're really assessing whether or not this is a compatibility issue or just something you're willing to compromise on. And it's this obsession with thinking, is there someone better out there? You know, I've noticed in my research that there are a lot of you in long-term committed relationships who wonder, is there someone better out there? The answer is, you'll never know. And the reason why this has become so common to wonder, is there someone better out there? I think it has a lot to do with dating culture and social media and romantic comedies and how it's put it into your head. The fact is, there's no perfect person. Everyone has past issues. Everyone has baggage. And the older you get, oh my God, the more baggage you have. And most people haven't dealt with it. So only you know whether you don't appreciate what's right in front of you or if you see everything in your life as half empty. You may think the grass is always greener somewhere else, but the fact is the grass is greener where you water it. So before you walk out the door on an absolutely great relationship with a solid foundation, make sure to check yourself. Are you starting to get obsessed with looking for that magical unicorn 20% of the nice-to-haves? Something that feels a little better in the moment, and you're not actually appreciating and seeing the 80% that's already there in the relationship that you have, maybe all it needs is a little more attention from you, a little acceptance, a little consideration, a little kindness, just a little more water. And that brings me back to the two things that are required to make a long-term relationship work. Both people want the relationship to work, and both are willing to work on it to make it better. That's what I mean by watering the grass. You got to work on it. And second, the issues that create problems and frustrations for you don't require either one of you to give up your dreams or compromise on your values. And at some point, you just have to choose. And that might mean choosing what is right in front of you, and loving it, and watering it, and accepting, and appreciating, and nurturing it. And as someone who's been married for almost 30 years, I assure you, every single couple has faced really dark and scary times in their relationships. And for the couples who choose to lean in and work together through their struggles and their issues and their challenges, not a single one of them regrets it. But I do know a lot of people who have gotten divorced or broken up, and they have this nagging regret that they wish they would have worked a little harder to make it work and had had the courage to face their issues sooner. Maybe if they would have had the hard conversations and gone to therapy, things would have turned out differently. Because even if it didn't end up keeping them together, it would have made the process of breaking up and the aftermath of separating the kids involved a hell of a lot easier. And look, I hope you can make it work. I hope that you're in a relationship that can improve and grow and will stand the test of time and bring out the best in you. But at some point, if you've just gone around and around and around, it means finding the courage to believe in that deep intuition inside of you that something about this just no longer fits. You know it. You've just been terrified to admit it to yourself. Sometimes you have to end things before they end you. If you know what your dreams are in life, you deserve and need relationships that support you in achieving them. If you stay with someone who doesn't share the same hopes and dreams that you have, it will make you both miserable. And look, it's easy for me to sit here and tell you that. It's easy for me to say, let them go. Let them go. But there's nothing easy about breaking up with someone that you still love. That's when more than ever, you're going to be grateful that you have the let them theory to help you get through it. Surviving heartbreak. I want to speak directly to you or someone that you love who's going through heartbreak right now. This will be one of the hardest things you ever experience. And you will get through this. The worst thing someone can say to you right now when a relationship has just ended is that you should focus on loving yourself. That is like, ugh, it's the world's worst advice. Like, it should be illegal to say that to somebody who has just been broken up with. Because when you're going through heartbreak, you often hate yourself. You question everything. You wonder if you'll ever find love again. You want your old life, and you just wish you could go back to the way things were. You want what you used to have, and it feels like your heart is shattering, because it is. What you're feeling is grief. The life you thought you were going to live just died. And just like the experience of losing a loved one, when you go through heartbreak, you will experience all the same stages of grief, and it's going to consume you for days and weeks, even months. You are going to think of this person nonstop. You're going to have to resist the urge all day, every day, to text or call or to listen to their voice memos or to look at the photos or to check their location or to watch their stories online. And I just went through this firsthand because I watched my daughter Sawyer go through the biggest heartbreak of her life while we were researching and writing this section of the book. And so I was speaking to my therapist, Anne, because I was asking for advice about how to support her as I was watching her heart just shatter in front of my eyes. And she said something that was so eye-opening, and it made so much sense that I want to share it with you. She said, Mel, heartbreak hurts so deeply because everything about them is intertwined in your nervous system. They have been a part of you and you have been a part of them for a long time. It's why you can still feel their presence and you can hear their voice. You're so used to talking to them every day, and so you naturally want to reach out. Yes, you miss them, but your nervous system misses them too. And it misses the ways in which they've become intertwined with your experience of life. This is normal. What she was explaining is the neurological, physiological, and neurochemical aspect of what it feels like to experience heartbreak. As you walk down the street or you drive in your car, you will imagine that they're there next to you. You'll have a thought, and you can almost hear what they would say back to you. If something good happens, you're going to feel yourself wanting to share it with them. And if something changes in your family, you wish you could tell them. Because it's not just your heart that's breaking. It's all these patterns in your life. It's the circuitry in your body. It's your nervous system. It's the thoughts in your mind, the images in your heart. It's the songs you used to listen to. When you get dressed for work, when you climb into bed at the end of the day, when you wake up alone in the morning, they will be on your mind. You're going to live in fear and in hope of bumping into them. You'll watch their life play out in pictures from far away. You'll be terrified of the day that you learn that they've met someone. The hardest part about breaking up is that you have to go through it. There's no avoiding it. You experience it in every cell of your body because you must unlearn what it was like to be with them and learn how to live your life again without them. This is why so many of us hold on for so long. Let them will not make this easy. Let them will not remove the pain. My therapist, Anne, has a rule of thumb when it comes to surviving heartbreak. No contact for 30 days. And the reason why is because any contact at all, whether it's seeing a photo or hearing their voice, it will activate all the old patterns in your nervous system. And it's going to really force you to take a step back in your process of unlearning life with this person. This is the hard part. And you're going to be in the thick of it for at least 3 months. That is how long the research says that it takes to grieve a breakup before you start to even feel a little better. Now, by the 11-week mark, the research shows that 71% of people start to feel better. And I just offer that as a benchmark to give you some comfort that, yes, it will get better. Now, it may get better in 11 days. It may get better in 11 weeks. It may take a little longer, but it will get better. The Let Them theory will help you move through this and learn from it and come through it stronger and more connected to yourself and to what you want and what you deserve in your life. But while you're in this first part, you need to allow yourself to be in it. Let me grieve. Let me cry in my bed for days. Let me tell the story over and over of how it ended. Let me resist reaching out. Let me be in a depressive state. All this sadness, it's a mentally healthy response to heartbreak. And when you're ready, there are a couple things that, based on the research, will help you accept that the relationship is over and that it's time for you to pick up the pieces of your life and move forward. Now, these are a few recommendations for how you can get started on settling your nervous system and moving through this breakup in a healthier way. Because it is not time that heals. It's what you do with that time that matters. And here are 6 specific things that I want you to do. 1, remove all environmental triggers. I want you to take every visible reminder, whether it's trinkets, shirts, pictures, whatever, and get them out of your sight. Because when you're first broken up with, the patterns of life with this person are so hardwired in your body and mind that simply seeing things that remind you of them is preventing you from moving forward. You don't need to be dramatic. You don't have to burn things or shred them or throw them out. Just put them in a box. Put it somewhere you're not going to see it, and you can come back to them later when you have time, space, and distance from all this emotion. 2nd thing, give your bedroom a small makeover. The chances are you guys spent a lot of time together in your bedroom, and giving your bedroom a little refresh really helps signal that the new chapter is beginning. And you don't have to spend a lot of money to do this. You could literally move your bed to a different wall. You could paint a wall. You could get that cool removable stick-on wallpaper. If you've got a little cash or somebody's like, what can I do for you? Well, new sheets or a new comforter, that would certainly help. Even as simple as moving your desk or your dresser or a chair, I promise you it will really help you. 3rd, reach out to friends, siblings, cousins, coworkers, anybody, because there's an empty space that this person left that needs to be filled, and you need support, so go ask for it. And there's nothing to be embarrassed about. Every single one of us have gone through a breakup, and we understand how horrible it can be. And I also recommend that you ask people to check in on you over the next few months and invite you to go out for a walk or to have dinner with you so you can get out of your house. And speaking of getting out of your house, that brings me to 4. You have to fill up your calendar. I know you're not going to feel like it. You need to do it. Look up events in your area, buy tickets so that you're committed to go see an exhibit at a museum or go see a friend out of town. Reach out to friends that you didn't have time to see when you were in your relationship and make plans, so that you don't wake up every day and see an empty calendar, but you are experiencing a busy one. The distraction, it really helps, because nothing is worse for a breakup than an idle mind. And if you don't have things to keep you busy, you will busy yourself by thinking about them. 5, pick a challenge that you've always wanted to do. Whether it's a mountain you've always wanted to climb, or a triathlon you never had time to train for, or a class you've always wanted to take, or even learning guitar or a new language, this is the perfect time. And choose this challenge for yourself so that you're doing something for you that you're proud of. Because there's no better feeling when you start to direct your time back into improving yourself. And 6, this is another one from my therapist, Ann Davin. If you knew the love of your life was around the corner and this breakup was bringing you one step closer to meeting them, how would you spend your nights and weekends while you're still single? One of the biggest fears when people go through a breakup is that they'll be alone forever. And they'll never find someone as good as the person that just walked out the door. That's not true. And being intentional about how you want to spend your time while you're single signals to your brain that you actually do believe that you won't be single forever, and that you better make the best out of the time that you got right now. And one other thing, don't do a revenge diet. This is a huge mistake, to use your heartbreak as an excuse to lose weight, or go get jacked at the gym, or somehow make yourself more attractive with the hope of winning your ex back or rubbing it in their face as you get hotter. Don't do that, because it means you're still chasing your ex and they are still very much a part of your day-to-day motivation. If you want to go to the gym and get back in shape for yourself, fabulous. If you want to take care of yourself and prioritize healthier habits, amazing. But don't do it for them. Do it for you. Most of all, give it time. Time doesn't heal all wounds. What you do with your time does. No matter how busy you get or how much better you start to feel, it's going to take time to process everything that happened. Let it take time, because it will take time. Often, it takes a lot of time. But if you truly embrace everything that you just learned, and you follow this step-by-step guide, and you just keep waking up every day and putting one foot in front of the other, one of these days, you're going to wake up and realize that you're not only feeling better, you are better. And I can't end the section on love by talking about heartbreak and breakups. So let's talk about the love of your life. You are the love of your life. And as you've navigated through the challenges of love, heartbreak, and everything in between, it is so important to pause and recognize a fundamental truth. A relationship with someone else doesn't make you worthy of love. Your existence does. You're going to spend your entire life, from the day you're born to the day you die, with only one person, you. You are the only love of your entire life. And so far throughout this book, we've focused on your relationships with other people and how to stop making other people a problem and just let them live their lives. We've also talked about how to use the let them theory to transform your relationships from frustration and tension into the greatest sources of joy, meaning, and connection. But there's one relationship that underpins them all, and it's the one you have with yourself. Whether you're single, dating, married, or healing from heartbreak, the power to create incredible relationships, it's already within you. The Let Them Theory has taught you how to navigate the complexities of human interactions, how to let other people be who they are, how to reclaim your power by choosing how you show up. But now, it's time to apply everything you've learned to the single most important relationship you're ever going to have. And that's the one you have with yourself. Let them be them, so you can finally let me be me. You've learned that other people can be one of the greatest sources of happiness, better health, support, love, and connection. You deserve all that and more. You deserve relationships that elevate you, that nourish your soul, and that reflect the love and respect you have for yourself. But here's the key. The foundation of all these incredible relationships, whether it's your friends or your family or the person that you spend your life with, it all lies in how you treat yourself. And so ask yourself, Do you respect your own boundaries? Are you showing yourself the compassion and kindness that you offer to everybody else? Are you allowing yourself to pursue your dreams without waiting for someone else's approval? You are the only person you're guaranteed to spend the rest of your life with. And this isn't a cliche, it's a reality. So what kind of relationship do you want to have with yourself? And I'm not going to tell you to just go love yourself in some dumb, superficial way, but I am going to tell you that you have a choice to prioritize your needs, your desires, and your happiness. And this is not about becoming like super self-centered or shutting other people out. It's about recognizing that love, respect, and care that you give to yourself, it sets the standard for every other relationship in your life. And when you stop chasing validation from other people and you start choosing to honor yourself, you are sending a powerful message to the world about how you deserve to be treated. See, you don't need anyone else's permission to be happy or to pursue your passions or express yourself more or to live the life you've always dreamt of. The only permission you need is your own. And you have spent enough time waiting for someone else to give you what you crave, whether that's love, acceptance, approval. The truth is, everything you're looking for starts with you. The Let Them theory in this regard is more than just a tool for navigating relationships with other people. At its core, it's a guide for how you learn to treat yourself with more love, respect, and kindness. And you deserve that. So let them be who they are. But more importantly, let yourself be who you truly are. Let me prioritize my own happiness. Let me pursue my dreams with passion. Let me set boundaries that protect my peace. Let me choose relationships that uplift and inspire me. Let me love myself enough to walk away when it just no longer works. Love doesn't require you to wait for the right partner or the right friend or the right opportunity to come along. It's about recognizing that you, yes, you are the source of your own happiness, your own fulfillment, and your own joy. And when you truly embrace that, everything else falls into place. So as you move forward, remember this: you are the love of your life, and the life you create, full of meaningful relationships, joy, and fulfillment, begins with how you choose to love yourself. Let me pursue my dreams with passion. Let me prioritize my own happiness. Let me set some boundaries that protect my peace. Let me choose relationships that uplift and inspire me. Let me love myself enough to walk away when it no longer works. This isn't about waiting for the right partner or the right friend or the right opportunity to come along. This isn't about bending over backwards so everyone thinks you're a good friend or a good daughter. It's about being good to yourself. It's about recognizing that you're the source of your own happiness and your own fulfillment and your own joy. And you've been withholding it from yourself because you think it's got to come from someone else. When you truly embrace that, everything else falls into place. And I'm so excited for you because it took me 50 years to figure this out. So as you move forward, remember this: you are the love of your life, and you always will be. And the life that you create, full of meaningful relationships and joy and fulfillment, it just begins with how you choose to love yourself. Until today, you've been accepting less than the love you deserve from others and from yourself. And maybe now it's dawning on you, the secret about the Let Them theory. It's not about them at all, is it? Because when you let them be them, you can finally let me be me. Other people do not hold the power in your relationships. You do, in your existing relationships and in your relationship with yourself. Welcome to your metamorphosis. When you say let them, you accept people as they are, and you accept their behavior as the truth about how they feel about you. When you say let me, you choose how love shows up in your life, and that's where you have all the power. So stop chasing love and start choosing it.